Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you today?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm great.
I'm doing pretty well.
The final numbers are in, and we want to say to many of you, our listeners, in podcast land, in the broadcast area
all
here in
place.
New Jersey
People send
and
checks
Staten
in
Island.
From all over.
We did a fundraiser, and you can find out more about it. We won't spend too much time talking about it because it's in the past. But we did a fundraiser for the Hunter Morris Fund. A kid who has a rare disorder, he can't eat. Trust me, it's difficult. And he has very middle-class parents who are struggling to keep their house and keep him alive. And so we did a fundraiser for him. We know these people. We used to babysit Mark's kids when they were kids themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a fundraiser in the restaurant. We set up a website for them. We set up credit card processing for them. And other friends of theirs had set up a foundation, a 501c3 foundation that people could donate to. And we did an auction at the restaurant. We opened up the website to donations. It's still up there, huntermorrisfund.com. Or, you know, I'm not sure that's exactly...
huntermorrisfund.com.
Yeah, right. Or you can link to it through our website on Restaurant Guys Radio. And you see a picture of this cute kid. He's really cute. But go ahead, Mark.
We raised over $37,000 in an evening at Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. We had a wine auction, some great donations from great winemakers. Araujo and Tony Soder and...
Rare bottles
of wine from their own cellars. It was just a great
wine. People and restaurant people are very generous. You know that? These wine guys sent us bottles that are just not, I mean, they're not in the auction market. Mm. You couldn't, you know, they're priceless in a way.
For me, this was very rewarding because so many times when you donate to lots of different places that you can donate to, you really don't have any idea how much of the money is actually getting to the cause that you donate to.
Yeah, this was every penny. We didn't take a thing. We donated food.
As a matter of fact, what we did is we had people write checks directly to the fund, and it was just so rewarding. I think people really enjoyed the experience and know that we changed this family's life.
You know what else was really great? A number of our waiters decided to donate back their gratuity for the evening and worked for free. And I thought, you know, some of these kids are struggling to pay for college and don't know where the next month's rent is coming from. They got the beer covered, but they don't know where the rent is coming from next month. But still, you know, these guys had a six-pack less this month to help out. But no, I mean, I don't want to diminish that at all. That was really great. Anyway, if you want to learn out more about this kid, Hunter Morris, you can go to thehuntermorrisfund.com, which is a website we set up, or you can link through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. And to all of you out there who sent checks or made donations
thank
online.
Thank you so much. It was really, really
a
very, very special evening. And like I said, it's rare in one night that you can change someone's life.
Let's go on to something positive. Kill it, cook it, eat it. It's my version of positive. It's a program on the BBC. And the idea is that to bring together the notion of food as an animal, that food doesn't come from a package, especially if you're not a vegetarian, it doesn't come from a plant, it comes from an animal. And so it's getting quite a lot of press, but on the BBC it's a show called Kill It, Cook It, Eat It, which takes you from killing the animal to butchering the animal, and then eating it.
Well, Francis and I talk about this all the time, and it's obviously it's with our meat, but it's also even with our vegetables and the things that we grow that come from farms. There's such a disconnect between what you see in the package, in the carton, in the saran wrap at your store as from where it comes.
Right. My niece thinks that chicken comes from a styrofoam package with with clear plastic over it.
I have a friend who loves chicken but can't stand to eat chicken if there's chicken bones in it.
Because
can't stand, because then she relates it to the fact that it was actually an animal. And we should relate to the fact that it's actually an animal.
Or be a vegetarian. I mean, there are a lot of people who propose plant-based diets, and if you think that it's immoral to kill an animal, then you shouldn't be eating meat. Okay, I don't kill it. But you know, I think kill it, cook it, eat it is the show on the BBC, and I think that's really a great lesson for young people to learn. And frankly, I think that if people were more in tune with what went on in farms and what it was to kill an animal and to raise an animal with respect. When they heard about what went on at corporate agribusiness farms, where animals are treated very unnaturally, where chickens have their beaks cut off, so when they go crazy from being confined in a cage, they don't peck each other to death, you would look at that and say, that's disgusting. Raising a chicken on a farm where it pecks around for grub is not disgusting. And then killing it and you know, having a chicken from that, I think that's the best tasting chicken, but it is also very natural. You know, and I think one of the things that these big farms benefit from is that you don't have any connection at all. The very idea of killing a chicken is gross to you, so you don't make a distinction between a humane way of killing and raising a chicken and an inhumane
way. Well, here's, though, the kill it, cook it, eat it. That's going to be gross, okay? When you see them butcher the animals, it's going to be gross.
Nah, as soon as it's dead to me, it becomes meat.
I understand, as soon as it's dead. But before it's dead, it's an animal.
Cut its head off, and in that instant, I'm fine with it. Head comes off, and it's a meat. Look, from an animal to meat. It goes into the chicken heaven, and the animal, and the soul leaves the body, and it's dinner. Okay, right there. Now, in America, we don't have kill it, cook it, eat it. And it by the way, that's on BBC Three, if you're a geek like that. We'll put up a link to it, but it's bbc.co.uk/BBC3programs. Kill it. I love that. Anyway, so we'll put that up on the website. But we do have the Outdoor Channel in America has a similar show, which is called Ready, Aim, Grill. Mm-hmm. I love these. I love the titles of these shows. Ready, Aim, Grill is that's more a show about, it's for hunters, and it talks about how to cook good food once you hunt.
It's on the Outdoor Channel, so pretty much it's a hunting show.
It's less about where your food comes from and making that connection. The hunter knows, blam, there's where it came from. You know what I mean? but it's funny, because I used to hunt when I was a kid with my dad, you know, we would bring stuff home, and none of the moms were very good cooks. And so it all went into the same pot. I have to say, it was a pretty good stew. But in that stew would be pheasant or partridge or squirrel or all of them. Or a little bit of rabbit, some hare. Hello.
I think maybe John Madden's turducken is leaving something on the table there.
It all went in.
Stew is what your family was making, huh?
It was a very good hunter stew, but I think what could I do with those wild pieces of game today? You know what I mean?
You know,
not the squirrel. Squirrel would go back into the stew.
I've eaten at your family's table. I like eating at the restaurant better.
Yeah, well.
It's more fun.
My sister's going to be upset with you now. No, well, the thing is, our normal food would you just boil it, but you don't boil game, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Scottish do, but nobody else does. And to be Scottish, the only people the Irish can make fun of for the food. Inventors of haggis. Anyway, but I like the idea. I like the concept of kill it, cook it, eat it, and I would check it out online. I think we should have something like that here. I think it's good for your kids to watch an animal be killed that way. I think it's bad for your kids to watch the Terminator blow somebody's head off. I think there's a difference, and we lose sight of that.
And along that line of knowing from where your food comes, today we have a great guest. Sheila Bowman is going to come on the show, and she's going to talk to us about where our fish comes from.
She's from the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
And she's going to talk about places that are doing it right and places that maybe are doing it wrong and how we can learn about which places we should be buying our fish from.
And she's also a lot of fun. And they have this great resource, which is a guide you can carry in your pocket, which I think is fabulous. And we have one here that we're looking at. And we'll tell you how to get one in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Oh, and they're free. And we're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left, and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're going to be talking today with Sheila Bowman. She is the outreach manager of the Seafood Watch program at the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is, even if you don't live near Monterey, can help you figure out how to eat well and how to eat responsibly from our oceans.
Sheila Bowman, welcome to the show.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. So what is Seafood Watch all about?
Well, Seafood Watch is a program, as you mentioned, of the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And what we do here is we create recommendations for different seafood items based on how they're caught and the impact of their fishery or their farm on the oceans.
So you recommend what people should eat? That seems kind of odd for an aquarium. I always think there's a little dichotomy there.
Is it like, do you guys have extra or something? Is that the deal?
Can I go fishing at the aquarium? No, that's not allowed, right?
No, that's not allowed, actually. And, it's true. It's one of the ways that people really do relate to fish, though, that a lot of people don't see or live around fish. So when they see a 600-pound tuna, it's surprising how many people go, oh, yeah, tuna.
Right.
Tuna salad. And you're thinking, here's this gorgeous creature, and all people are thinking about is, you know, some crummy tuna sandwich, you know.
Can I tell you that there's a funny story that I have once when somebody came into the restaurant who wasn't a very, you know, experienced diner maybe, and a very nice lady. And I happened to be tableside. This was many years ago, and we were talking about the special. And she said, what do you recommend? I said, well, the grilled tuna is very nice. And she said, grilled tuna? I said, yeah, it's grilled tuna. And she said, how do you grill tuna? And I said, you put it on the grill and you grill it. And she said, I got to see that. Okay, I'll have it. And she ordered the grilled tuna. And she came out and I was tableside when it arrived because I wanted to see what was so interesting about this. And she said, oh, I was trying to figure out how you'd keep it from falling through the little holes. She's thinking canned tuna. And so she didn't even think of it as a fillet. You're going all the way back to make it be like a fish.
Exactly.
Imagine her reaction when she realized that actually came from a fish.
Well,
exactly. And that really captures a lot of what we try to get across to people is it's not just food. It is really wildlife.
Well, you guys don't just get across to people. One of the things that you've created is a really, really wonderful resource for consumers and restaurateurs where it's a database that you've created that gives people some suggestions as to the kinds of fish that they can eat that are sustainable fish as opposed to maybe some of the fish in the world that we've been overfishing.
And I want to point out why we asked you to be on the show is this: it's actually kind of complicated to try and figure out what's good to eat for the planet. And yours is pretty user-friendly. Why don't you tell us about how you help people figure out what to do?
Well, I'm glad to hear you say it's user-friendly. We really strive to make it so. We've put all of our recommendations onto what we call pocket guides, which are, you know, easy to carry around with you so that when you're in a position where you're trying to make a seafood selection, you don't have to rely on your memory. You can really just pull out this pocket guide, and it has lists of seafood, and the lists are green, yellow, and red. And for anybody who, you know, drives a car, hopefully that's a clear analogy that we want you to eat the green seafood, we want you to not eat the seafood on the red list, and then the items on the yellow list are for special occasions. You eat them once in a while.
I thought yellow meant go faster.
That's
in New Jersey.
That's
in New Jersey and L.A. The thing I like to compare this to is I thought the pocket nature of this thing was very, very good. And you know, it's hard even for Mark and I as we strive every day to be environmentally responsible in our restaurants and in our personal lives. But, you know, I'm at Whole Foods and I'm buying a piece of fish. And I'm like, no, wait, is that endangered? Do I not buy it? What is the, what matters about it? And, you know, wine geeks carry vintage charts in their wallet. Why? You know, it's not that difficult to carry a little pocket guide in your wallet.
I also think for so many people, you're hearing so many of the consumers and restaurateurs, we hear so many stories about, okay, this is overfished, this isn't overfished, farm-raised is better than not farm-raised, but this farm isn't acting sustainably, so does that really work to farm-raise this particular product in this particular way? You know, it can be very, very daunting.
What challenges do you find? How do you go about organizing it to communicate to the customer what they should or shouldn't do in the most simple terms?
Well, I think that, you know, the big message is to carry that pocket guide. And I know that sounds really simple, but a lot of people who want to follow the pocket guide don't keep it with them.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other thing is sort of referring to what you were saying is that this is a bit of a moving target. None of these fisheries necessarily stay where they are, or, you know, there's a lot of movement and change. So as we tend to do, we may exploit or overfish a fishery. It may move down the list. But the good news is that as people are starting to figure out that, you know, we want to manage fisheries and we want to build and organize better fish farms, that we actually also see people moving up the list. Well, into the yellow and green.
I want to talk about that, about those successes in just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment with Sheila Bowman, Director of Outreach for Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and stage left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi Restaurants, and today we're talking with Sheila Bowman from the Monterey Bay Aquarium, where they have come out with a program called Seafood Watch, which helps you decide what food you can eat, and even with a little pocket calendar, a little pocket guide you can put in your pocket. Before we go any further, Sheila, we're going to link to the Monterey Bay Aquarium from our website, restaurantguysradio.com, to let people know how to get one of these pocket calendars. But how can they get one directly? What's your website?
The website is seafoodwatch.org, mm-hmm. all one word, and if you go on there, you'll see on that home page on the bottom left, it says, you know, there's a link there to how to order your free pocket guides.
And it's free, free, free.
Free.
You can order a bunch and give them as presents.
We encourage that. We really want people to pick them up, hand them out to their friends and families. If it's a restaurant and they want to hand them out to their customers, we provide all of this free of charge.
You know, Sheila, why don't you send us a bunch, and we'll give them out at our restaurants to anybody who's interested.
Hey, and I got an idea for consumer activism. If you believe this kind of stuff is important, there are a lot of restaurateurs who just, it's too complicated for them. You know, these guys who work in restaurants, chefs work 100 hours a week, you know, and sometimes they need their customers to let them know when things are important to them. Maybe mailing or handing to the chef or maitre d' of a restaurant that you like, handing them one of these guys might be a nice way to let them know that their customers care about the kind of food they serve in their restaurant. So maybe you can make it work the other way.
One of the things I really enjoyed about the guide as I go through it, you know, we buy a lot of products from all over the place, okay, and we try and stay local whenever possible, but certain fish only appear in certain places in the world. But, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy about the guide is that, you know, it'll tell you that certain cod from certain places may be, you know, very extremely endangered, where from other places it may not be such a bad choice. And I like the opportunity to look at from where a fish comes in that guide.
Well, and I like being able to boil it down into red, yellow, and green. See, that's what I want. I want totally the other thing. You mentioned before the break, though, that one of the things that we're seeing is as people are becoming more aware of trying to eat well with, you know, because so many fisheries are in danger of just collapse, that we're seeing people move up the list, that we're seeing certain fisheries move off the edge of the cliff. Want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, absolutely, and I think that when, you know, most humans, when they're given the challenge of trying to do things better, really some, you know, there's always going to be people who step up. And we've seen everything from salmon farms can be one of the worst of the environmental challenges out there, to people who are doing long lining, who really have stepped up and said, okay, now that we understand what the challenge is, let's see what we can do to make it better. And we've seen people, you know, out here in the Pacific Ocean, we've got longline fishermen who have changed the shape of the hooks. And by just changing the shape of the hooks, they've been able to exclude turtles from taking as many of those hooks.
And that's what's called, just so you know, when the listener land, what that's all about, that's called bycatch.
Mm-hmm.
And,
exactly.
You know, we catch the turtles, they don't want the turtles, and they throw them out, but they're dead anyway.
Yeah, we'll talk more about bycatch, and we're going to talk more about salmon and the salmon you should buy when we come back.
After the news, more with Sheila Bowman from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today, we're talking with Sheila Bowman from California. She is the outreach coordinator for the Seafood Watch program of the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which is a program that was designed to help consumers, chefs, restaurateurs, fish buyers have a clear and easy guide to what is a responsible fish choice to make and what is an irresponsible fish choice to make and what is sort of on the border with a simple red, yellow, and green marking and a pocket guide that you can carry with you all the time.
So, Sheila, let's talk about salmon, for instance, as one of the fish that we're going to talk about. I think people are – it's one of those greatly confusing fish that are out there. We hear all different kinds of things that wild salmon is – there's not enough of it, and farm-raised salmon isn't being farm-raised correctly. What should we look for when we buy salmon? Is farmed necessarily better or worse than wild?
Well, if you were to consult your Seafood Watch guide, you would see that all farmed salmon currently sits on our red list. It's really a very environmentally destructive business right now. And I think the key thing to note about farming salmon is that salmon is really, it's a top of the food chain kind of carnivore. So if you were to think about something on the land that would be similar, it's like the lions and tigers and bears.
Mm-hmm.
These are fish that eat other fish that have a pretty high demand for protein. So to create a pound of salmon, you actually have to feed it 5 pounds of other fish.
Mm-hmm.
But you start to see that it's one of those triangles that, you know, it's not a very good conversion factor.
Now, I'm sorry, and also are farmed salmon, are salmon farms inherently environmentally unsound? Do they pollute inherently, or can they be...
Well, currently, most of the farming salmon is done in what we call a net pen system. So it's literally you just put a net in the ocean and go to it. And so all of the fish poop and all of the leftover food and all of the disease and parasites and things just kind of freely flow from the farm out to nature.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some impacts that are becoming more and more concrete of what the farmed fish can actually transmit these diseases to the fish in the wild, and that's become a problem.
Salmon are one of those fish that they're being penned, and a lot of these fisheries are being penned in very, very high quantities and high densities.
Correct.
And it's creating a huge waste problem in these very, very small areas compared to the number of fish that are...
I read somewhere that a contemporary fish farm, if they don't treat the waste, and a lot of them don't, like in a pen system like this, can create the same amount of waste in the ocean as a city of 40,000 people.
Yes.
Is that true?
That is true. And, you know, a lot of people would say, well, that's just fish poop, and it's out there anyway. But the fact of the matter is that the densities of these fish farms, as
right.
you indicated, can be millions and millions of fish. They're shoulder to shoulder.
Right. And
you just would never find that as a salmon in its normal life condition.
Well, and people say that, you know, the agribusiness sort of likes to present it that way. Well, it's just, you know, it's natural anyway. Yeah, and so much of agribusiness farming. Yeah, well, think of, you know, a city of 40,000 people. Yes, one guy goes out in the woods behind your house and, you know,
right.
does his business in the woods, it's not going to make that much of an environmental difference. But if 40,000 people did, you'd have
right.
a problem.
Can we talk for a minute about the organic salmons and some of the salmons from Scotland and now Japan that are coming out and how the fisheries are responding to the demand for better ways of doing the fish farming?
We absolutely can. And, you know, I think that we here at Seafood Watch think it's ironic that anyone would call a salmon organic, because and I'm sure you are familiar with organic standards, there's just really no way that you can raise a salmon organically unless you're going to raise all of the little fish that it eats organically. I mean, it's just...
And then plankton that the little fish eat has to be organic. And
exactly.
Then,
yeah. It's really a pretty amazing endeavor to think about. So... We absolutely don't think that you can raise a carnivorous species organically. And whether that be, like I said, a bear or salmon. We just don't see how it translates.
But I will tell you from a taste perspective, having tasted some of these fish from Japan and Scotland, they do taste better than the other farm-raised salmon.
Well, I think what that points to is there are individuals out there that are trying to do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're raising those fish at lower densities so they don't have to use so many antibiotics. And they're doing things to, like I said, start to creep themselves out of this environmental pit and try to be a little bit more, you know, green. And according to us, they're not there yet. But I'm not going to say that they won't get there because I really believe they will.
So now what about the argument that, and I love sticking with one fish because there are lessons to be learned about all the fish. And one of the things that I think we should learn out there in listener land is that it's not simple, that it is a complex issue, and it takes a little bit of brain power. But our listeners have a lot of brain power, and I think the American consumers can show some wisdom once in a while, and that's what we're asking you to do. And you're helping with this little card that you can carry in your wallet, the Seafood Watch card. Let me ask you, though, about the idea that, well, eating farmed salmon takes pressures off the wild stock of salmon. Does that hold any water?
Well, we currently don't think that holds any water because, like I said, what we're finding is these farms actually are detrimental to wild stocks.
Hmm.
So a lot of the wild salmon, the little juveniles, are coming down, swimming right past these farms and just swimming basically through a tremendous, you know, parasite, waste, disease, you know, water supply, and it's killing them. So, no, we really think that the farms, because of where they're positioned and what they're dislodging into the water, that we really don't think it's taking pressure off. We think it's part of the bigger problem.
So do we have an answer for the increased demand for salmon in the world?
I think that the answer is to go with wild-caught salmon to support that and to understand that salmon, like really good tomatoes, is a seasonal product.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to really look at when you're eating it and if it's going to be a farm product for that part of the year, you know, make another selection.
Well, and also
Arctic char is a great choice.
It really is.
And
by
also,
the way.
And also, let's understand that it's going to be a more expensive solution.
Now, Arctic char is not that much more expensive.
No.
Than salmon.
I mean, wild salmon is going to be a more expensive choice than conventionally farmed. But that's why they do it that way is because it's cheaper. Now,
well, exactly. And you know, better food and better products have costs.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a new exhibit here at the aquarium called the Real Cost Cafe, where we talk about, you know, farm salmon may be cheap in dollars, but the cost is that we're destroying our environment, we're destroying these wild fish stocks.
Oh, you and hippie. I'm sorry.
I know. So you got to think about all of those costs. You know, if you're comfortable wearing sweatshop clothing, go for it. But if you're not, you know, you're going to be making more responsible choices.
Well, let's talk about some responsible choices. What are some really fish that are being farmed responsibly?
Well, things like barramundi, have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah, we have it on our menu.
Yeah, that's over in your being farmed actually over where you guys live in the Northeast. That's a really good choice.
Now, let's stop right there for a moment. Let's talk about a barramundi farm and how a barramundi farm is different than a salmon farm.
Well, barramundi are not being farmed in the ocean. They're being farmed in a contained system on land.
Aha!
So that's a big key.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also really worked their diet so that they're not feeding them so much wild fish. They've been able to work in other proteins like soy proteins and other things to give these fish a good diet that doesn't just rely on other fish being, you know, caught and fed to them.
So you don't have to be a vegetarian, but your fish can be a vegetarian.
You know, there's a lot of good vegetarian fish out there, and I know, you know, we don't eat a lot of catfish out here, but catfish is a great option farmed. Tilapia is a good option. You know, all of the shellfish, I'm sure that, you know, up there in the Northeast, you guys have great shellfish, but mm-hmm. we don't out here.
Mm-hmm.
So we rely on farm shellfish for almost all of our different clams and mussels and that sort of thing.
Well, and I think that it's very important to point out that there are farms and there are farms. You know, a lot of these wild net farms in the ocean where they basically have a big net of these mm-hmm. farmed fish where they throw a lot of antibiotics and they throw out a lot of feed and a lot of coloring, and fish are kept unnaturally close together as a breeding ground for disease, and the genetic material of those fish is usually very similar. So there are a lot of problems with that kind of farming, but there's a very different kind of farm. There is a way to farm in a closed tank system.
Correct.
And that makes a huge difference, right? Would you say that's the largest difference between responsible farms and irresponsible farms?
The biggest difference, the big difference is how you raise the fish, like you just indicated, and what fish you choose. You're never going to raise a salmon on a vegetable diet. You know, they're just not vegetarian fish. So if you're going to go with that, you need, you know, you're already got one strike against you.
Hmm. So we should avoid carnivorous fish.
We should avoid carnivorous fish until the time that some of these fish farms have cleaned up the other 90% of their act, and then, you know, maybe we can start considering that.
All right, we're going to come back in just a moment and talk a little bit more with Sheila Bowman from the Seafood Watch at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. If you would like to get your hands on a little Seafood Watch pocket guide so you can stick it in your pocket and know what is responsible to eat when you're out at your market, out here in the Northeast we have a plethora of choices all year round, and there is always a responsible choice to make these days as we get more and more fish. Barramundi was a great example. We'll be talking more with Sheila Bowman about fish in general in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't, based on lighting. Lights on Nine is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on Nine supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on Nine has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis on stage left at Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're talking with Sheila Bowman from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. She's the outreach coordinator for their Seafood Watch program. Sheila, now, you have these Seafood Watch guides, these pocket guides that you stick in your pocket that you can get, by the way, by going to restaurantguysradio.com and looking at this show. We'll give you the link. What fish you get is different depending on which region of the country you're in, right? How does the seafood guides deal with that?
Absolutely. We have regional guides because we know that you folks in the Northeast eat a lot more clams and different items than we would eat out here on the West Coast. So each region, we have six regions throughout the country where we've tried to highlight some of the regional specialties. Crawfish in the South, and out here we have rockfish. So it's just a kind of a special card that everyone can carry for where they live.
Well, now we have a lot of industry folks who listen to the show. Actually, I didn't tell you this, Mark. Last night we got an email from I forget the guy's name. I'll have to say hello to you when I remember your name and look at the email. We got an email from New Zealand just last night.
Great.
Who's a guy who owns restaurants out there? So we have a lot of restaurateurs and chefs and restaurant professionals who listen to the show. Do you have other resources that are available to people who maybe buy larger quantities of fish and need to buy it every day?
We do, you know, and I think that it's really good to remember that this pocket guide is great for consumers, and it's pretty simplified, although, you know, some people call it complex. It's actually pretty simplified to make it easy for consumers. We know that people who own restaurants and who are doing larger buying of fish actually have more ability to look at the market and as you were saying, you know, pick fish from specific fisheries or specific oceans. So we've really subdivided a lot of these recommendations into a lot more detail on our website. So if you were to look at tuna, for example, I think we have 40 recommendations on our website of where the best tuna can come from in the world. So if you're a restaurateur, we can tell you and you can select something from the southern Atlantic Ocean But that's not something as a consumer I can go to a restaurant and say, is this tuna from the South Atlantic?
Right,
as a
consumer.
It's too crazy. But restaurants can really come on board and obviously have a huge impact by taking red list items off their menus and substituting in other green list items and exposing consumers to these great, great dishes and maybe the message of Seafood Watch at the same time.
I think there's no way for the consumer to know, unfortunately, how your tuna was caught, for instance. What, you know, was there? Is it being caught on long lines, or is there tons of bycatch with it? Are dolphins being caught with the tuna? Those kinds of things. And a resource like this makes it a lot more available. And frankly, I think restaurateurs should be asking those questions.
And restaurateurs are often buying while sitting at their computer, whereas consumers are usually buying while standing in the aisle of a market. And so we have a greater ability to look at what we're buying. And we're also ordering 200 pounds of it, and you're buying, you know, four. You know, so that makes it easier.
Exactly. And what we're asking restaurateurs to do is really do space specifically. You know, I want swordfish, but I don't want any swordfish.
Mm-hmm.
I want U.S. and Canadian swordfish that's either harpooned or hand-lined. And, you know, those industries are out there. And if we throw a little more support behind them, those products will become what's available in the market, not the turtle-catching imported swordfish that we all want to avoid.
I think that you strike a really good point here. I mean, I don't think people realize that the nature of the oceans. The oceans are in a much worse ecological state from a fish perspective than the animals on the land. We have nearly 75% of the world's fisheries either fully fished or overfished.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a number of the world's fisheries that have already collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
And with modern technology, we can send in boats and basically fish out a fishery inside 2 years. So your actions as consumers, and the other side of this is, when there's a movement to avoid a certain kind of fish, one or the other, we as consumers move the market very quickly. It's not like over the next 20 years we'll make a small difference. When we as consumers get behind something, and something like Seafood Watch, this is a great resource if you want to act responsibly, you can actually move the needle. And it's also much more dangerous because that needle is really close to red. And have I mischaracterized anything, Sheila?
No, we absolutely agree with that, and we've seen that exact thing happen with swordfish. We've seen it happen with imported beluga caviar. Some of these items that are so critically, you know, endangered, we've seen consumers turn away from them, and the market shifts.
And when the market shifts, these fish stocks can come back. But what you need to remember out there is that when fisheries collapse, they go to a point of no return where they never come back. There's part of the North Atlantic cod fishery that when it went down, there's no fish anymore. No one commercially fishes it anymore, but there's no fish left. And they're not coming back because there comes a point where a fishery goes to collapse. And when it collapses,
it changes the ecosystem completely.
And there's no guarantee you'll get it back.
Right.
I mean, so the time to act is now. There's a lot of great and delicious fish out there to have. You don't need to deny yourself completely. You just need to be decadent in a smarter way. And Sheila Bowman's guide can help you that from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. The organization is Seafood Watch, and you can link there through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Sheila Bowman, thanks for the great work that you do, and thanks for coming on our show to talk about it.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Sheila.
No problem. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis. We're talking with Sheila Bowman from the Monterey Bay Aquarium. What a useful guide this is for you to get.
It really is a great guide, and I went online. I spent a lot of time looking at the website, found some information that even I had no idea about, and it was fun to watch. You know, Sheila hit on something in that last segment that we glazed over and we need to talk about a little bit. I'm really annoyed at some of the food writers out there who are saying they're tired of seeing the name of the farm on the menu. They're tired of seeing the producer on the menu.
Get over it.
You need to get over it because the way that we move the market, the way that we get people to change from this certain type of salmon to this type of salmon is by putting the name on the menu. When we say, you know, we're buying tuna from this particular area of the world where it's not endangered, the way we get show people that we're buying superior product and get them in turn to buy into buying that product is we put it on our menus.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if we put something on our menu, well, thousands and thousands of people see that. It gets a lot of exposure, and that's good for the farmer, and whether it's a traditional land farmer or a fish farmer, that's good for the farmer who's producing that, and that's good for the farmer who's putting extra money into their product in order to create a superior product or a more sustainably friendly product.
And the only way that we can make a change is if we know where our food comes from. And, you know, it's funny. I can see how people say, you know, why would I go to a fine dining restaurant now? 20 years ago, the waiter wouldn't tell you what farm it came from, and you see people joke around. We even joke around sometimes. You know, the name of the pig was Ralph. Its grandfather was Sammy, and you know, we can joke around about it, but it is really important to know where your food comes from, because if you know where your food comes from, you can say, I think this is acceptable and this is not acceptable. And there's a whole lot out there that's not acceptable that I think the responsible people want to avoid. And it's also the way to make sure that you get the best food and we can continue to get the best food. And that's what we do every day at our restaurants. That's what we do almost all the time when we're on this show. And this guide, the little pocket guide from Seafood Watch, can really help you do the same thing when you're out in the market.
And I really do want to publicize on my menu these great farmers who are doing special things in order to either help the planet, help the quality of the food. Those farmers should be recognized.
Hear, hear. Let's go have some lunch from a small farmer's. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.